Hello everyone, I'm Priya Menon, the scientific media editor of the CureTalk blog and its CurePanel talk show. I welcome all of you to the Indian edition of the CurePanel talk show. Started in New York in August 2012, the CurePanel talk show is broadcast live on Blog Talk Radio and brings together experts and patients for a discussion on important topics in healthcare and medical research. The show has hosted eminent physicians and researchers from leading medical centers such as Harvard Medical School, Mayo Clinic, MD Anderson, Washington University, St. Louis, and well-known patient advocates such as Pat Killingsworth of the Multiple Myeloma blog and Gary Peterson of MyelomaSurvival.com for discussions on topics ranging from multiple myeloma, prostate cancer, breast cancer, to yoga and cancer nutrition. The show has been replayed and heard over 120,000 times. We launched the Indian edition of the show in August 2013 with a panel on diabetes with Dr. Milind Watve of IISER Pune. Today we are going to explore myeloma treatment options in India. Myeloma accounts for 13% of all hematological malignancies and 2% of all malignant diseases. The incidence of myeloma is 1 to 9 per 100,000 worldwide, with a higher incidence in North America and lower in Asia. In India, the median age of patients presenting with myeloma is 55 years, almost a decade less than that in the USA. We have had our participants from India write in about lack of awareness regarding multiple myeloma and lack of support systems like those available in the Western countries here. Today we are discussing treatment options available in India to increase awareness on the condition and empower patients with information that can help in opting for treatment. Our expert on the show is Dr. Lalit Kumar, Professor and Head of Medical Oncology at the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, New Delhi, India. He studied medicine at the SN Medical College, Agra, and completed his fellowship in medical oncology at the Cancer Institute, Chennai. He undertook a postdoctoral fellowship at the Leukemia Unit of Hammersmith Hospital, Royal Postgraduate Medical School, London, UK. Dr. Kumar has contributed to the development of medical oncology discipline at AIIMS and has developed a cost-effective and sustained bone marrow stem cell transplantation program. Dr. Kumar is a recipient of Dr. B.C. Roy National Award, Ranbaxy C. Science Foundation Award, and the Indian Council of Medical Research Award. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kumar.
Thank you so much.
My co-host for the show is Gary Peterson. Gary joins us from Florida. Gary is the editor of MyelomaSurvival.com and co-hosts our CurePanel talk shows on myeloma. Gary is a 7-year survivor of multiple myeloma. He works with myeloma specialists to provide life expectancy and survival rate data through his site. Welcome, Gary. Dr. Kumar, what we'll do here is I will begin with a few questions to set the background, okay. And then I shall be handing over to Gary to begin with the panel discussion.
Okay.
To begin with, Dr. Kumar, what are the current standard treatments that are available for myeloma in India?
Okay. Actually, for myeloma treatment, let me answer this question in the three categories. The category one, the patients who are young. As you rightly said, that median age in India is younger. So those who are so-called stem cell transplant eligible, that's number one. Number two, patients who are transplant ineligible, or number three, the patients who are elderly and obviously not a candidate for transplant. For patients who are transplant eligible, generally we would like to give them the initial therapy. We call it induction therapy. With one of the novel agents like thalidomide or lenalidomide or bortezomib along with steroids, particularly the dexamethasone. Generally, we like to give 4 to 6 cycles. At the end of 4 cycles, we do the response evaluation. And those who are in complete response or partial response or very good partial response, which means the 90% or more reduction in their M protein, and in the bone marrow becomes clear of plasma cells, those cases we counsel them for the autologous stem cell transplant. Patients who do not, who have response less than partial, that is less than 50% of response reduction in their myeloma protein. In those cases, we normally like to give two more rounds of further treatment, or we change to the second line therapy. And those who, again, after two or three cycles, we reevaluate them. If they respond, then we take them for the stem cell transplant. In second category, patients who are transplant ineligible because either they have some major organ dysfunction, for example, like kidney failure, renal failure, or some cardiac dysfunction, or some other major comorbidity which make them ineligible for the treatment like autologous stem cell transplant, but they otherwise are young. In such patients, we like to give them the therapy like, for example, bortezomib plus dexamethasone if they have renal failure, or if they do not have renal failure, then we may like to give them the similar kind of therapy options like thalidomide, dexamethasone, or lenalidomide plus dexamethasone. And again, if they respond to after 4 to 6 rounds of therapy, which is given every 4 weeks, then subsequently we put them on the maintenance therapy with the low-dose lenalidomide or thalidomide. Now, in third category, patients who are elderly, like 70 years, 75 years or elderly, in such patients, we generally like to use a combination of melphalan, prednisolone, and thalidomide. And generally, they receive 6 to 9 such cycles. And if they have achieved major response, which means like more than 50% reduction in their myeloma protein, then we put them either on the maintenance therapy in the low dose of thalidomide or lenalidomide, or we keep them on the regular follow-up. So this is the major component of the treatment option for such patients. In addition to in all three categories which I mentioned, we also like to give them supportive treatment, which is in the form of analgesics, especially in the initial few days to 2-3 weeks, till their pain settles down. Secondly, we also like to use the bisphosphonates, like zolitonic acid, which is given every month for about 6 to 9 months, and then subsequently we give them 3 to 4 monthly for rest of the for the next 2 to 3 years. And thirdly, the patients who have severe anemia, we like to also give them the packed red cells to keep their hemoglobin about 8 to 8.5 gram per deciliter. And if they have any infections, then we also like to give them the antibiotics in the initial days. So these are the supportive medicines which they may need initially for 1 to 2 weeks time, and subsequently, once they start improving, then most of them are on their own.
Doctor, hospital in India. Doctor, where else would you recommend myeloma patients for good myeloma treatment? Maybe you could mention a couple in the south, too. South of India.
Okay. The treatment options for myeloma are available in all the major teaching hospitals in India. They have more or less similar kind of standard treatment available. But I agree that in many cities which are which they do not have the major cancer hospitals or major teaching hospitals, the facilities for treatment may not be so good. But in the most of the metros today in India, the facilities for myeloma treatment generally are adequate, and they are at par with the many international standards. And most of the drugs like which we have in India, for example, today, like all the cytotoxic drugs, they are easily available. And currently, the novel agents which are been used in last 10 years, like thalidomide, lenalidomide, and bortezomib, they are available. And in fact, we have a little advantage because we have generic brands of these molecules, so which are relatively much cheaper and available to for our patients routinely. However, we do not have these the two new drugs which have been recently approved in U.S., like pomalidomide and carfilzomib, which are still not available in India.
So with the generic drugs that are available in India, what, according to you, with average cost of treatment for a patient with myeloma here?
Okay. The myeloma cost, for example, like bortezomib and dexamethasone, it will cost like 20,000 in rupees per cycle. So roughly we give like 4 to 6 cycles. So I would say like 100,000 rupees for the initial induction therapy. And then subsequently, if one patient goes for a stem cell transplant, then generally cost in the government hospital, like in our hospital, would come to about 2.5 lakhs Indian rupees, so which would be somewhere nearly about $5,000. And sometime like we use the combination of lenalidomide and dexamethasone, which is more or less close to similar kind of cost, but thalidomide relatively much cheaper, which will cost only about roughly 5,000 rupees in a month. So roughly like about 30,000 rupees for the initial 4 to 6 months treatment and then subsequently for transplant. So the overall cost in India in general, at least in the government hospital, is much cheaper. But the facilities like in the private setup or private hospitals, the transplant cost may be higher. The drug cost is more or less similar in the private hospitals too. And those who are transplant ineligible or those who are elderly, like if you're using combination of melphalan, prednisolone, thalidomide, as I mentioned just now, the total cost for about 6 to 8 months would come to about nearly about 20,000 to 25,000 rupees, so which will be like nearly close to $500. So in that sense, the overall cost is much less in India. But since many patients and there's no insurance system uniformly for most of the patients, so many patients may still find it difficult to afford this cost. At least in the government hospital, a lot of these drugs are available free and they're given free to the patients.
Dr. Kumar, please tell us about your cost-effective and sustained bone marrow stem cell transplant program.
Okay. We started the stem cell transplant program in 93, in fact, and our first 2 patients are still alive and they are myeloma free. So I would say they are almost 18 years now. We have 2 patients, so the first 2 patients are still doing very well. Now, the major thrust came from 1995 onwards, and we have done about nearly 230 transplants for multiple myeloma alone, which includes few patients of myelodysplasia also and POIM syndrome. But about 225 patients are for myeloma in last 15 years. And what we have been able to do is that our cost at our center comes to about almost 2 lakhs to 2.5 lakhs Indian rupees. And this primarily basically is because that Olney Institute is like a government hospital, so the nursing and physician cost is not there. The admission charges are practically very, very low, and the many of the antibiotics are given free. But so therefore the cost has really come down quite heavily. So the average hospital stay in our transplant unit comes to about roughly 15 days. So over these years, when we started in 1995, the cost used to come about 3.5 to 4 lakhs those days, which were quite expensive. But now, like 15 years down the line, the cost has come down to, in fact, I would say, in general, somewhere between 1.5 to 2 lakhs. So it really has come down.
Oh, wow, that's great. Dr. Kumar, at this point, I would like to introduce our panel. We have with us Jennifer Ahlstrom. Jennifer is a myeloma survivor and also hosts a weekly myeloma expert interview program called M-Patient Myeloma Radio on Block Talk Radio. Okay. Jenny is joining us from Utah. We were supposed to have, one of your patients, Nancy Ganju Singh, with us. Okay. Nancy, I think, is caregiver to husband Dr. Singh, who is your patient. Mm-hmm. And Nancy's husband is on maintenance therapy using lenalidomide. But unfortunately, I've been trying to connect her to the core show, but her line has a lot of disturbance.
Okay.
And, the other panelist was Rubina Khan Shapu. Rubina is a caregiver to her 8-year-old daughter who has leukemia. Okay. She was a broadcast journalist with NDTV, but Rubina, too, is unable to attend because her daughter is not very well. But they've all sent in their questions, Doctor, and I think during the panel discussion, I will be asking them on their behalf. Okay. Gary, I would, Gary, maybe you can begin with your questions, and Jenny too. You're live on air.
Hi, doctor. How are you? I'm glad that
I'm part of this program.
I think it's so very important for all the myeloma patients in India to hear from somebody right. like yourself, who has what I believe is an excellent program. And frankly, I was somewhat surprised. I'm sorry to say that, but you know, I didn't necessarily know that you had all the options available that you do have, that you just went through. And so,
yes, we have.
And one of the things I found was that in a previous interview that you had with Priya, your overall survival with transplant was 62% for 5 years. Now, that's overall survival.
Right.
So if you look at and adjust it for relative survival, meaning just what the deaths would be from multiple myeloma, that would be 70.9%. And if I compare that to the statistics here in the United States for all of our myeloma patients, we have 44.5. So your program would mean that your patients would live 1.9 times, or more likely to live 5 years by 1.9 times, which I think is remarkable, which is similar to what we have in the United States. So my question to you is a skilled myeloma specialist in India critical
right.
to survival in India?
Right. In fact, we have always discussed this issue about myeloma, that our results seems to be at par with the international data. And especially, I think one of the reason which we thought that the median age in India for myeloma is quite young. We have the median age of about 55 years. And so which is like relatively about 10 to 12 years younger. And this is prime. And in fact, you will be surprised to know that we have almost 12% of people are under the age of 40 years, which is really like compared to 2% in the Mayo Clinic series, which were published by Professor Robert Kyle about almost 15 years back. So we have a lot of young people. So is it... That's the one. Plus, fortunately, we have been, some of the new molecules which were introduced in somewhere 2001 subsequently, they have become available. So we have been able to use them, and that really has made a lot of difference.
Well, I think it says a lot for your program. When you say you talked about Velcade, Revlimid, or lenalidomide and thalidomide. And do you use the generics or do you use the name brand in your facility?
Mostly generics. Very few patients who have the insurance or like in India we have almost 75% of patients have to pay for their own, in the sense like either through the personal pocket, or they are the government servants, so the government sponsors them. But like 20% to 30% people may have some sort of insurance by the because of the government or because of some company which they are working, or some limited health insurance which they have. So most of these generic drugs which are available, they are relatively cheaper. So they are within the reach of the, at least in the government hospital, government has making efforts so that they are available to most people actually.
So those drugs are concerned, do they seem to have the same activity?
The response and the outcome?
Yes.
You mean the... I mean, in fact,
you give Revlimid
the
or you give Natas or whatever I think it is, the generic drug. Is it the same? Basically, you're getting the same result?
Same results. I would say like almost more than 90% of the cases, and I would say particularly 95% of our patients do get only generic drugs. All the three new molecules, the Thel and Len and Bortezomib, and we feel that we are getting our results are almost similar.
Okay. Well, one thing for me, you say that you did, I guess, 300 transplants, but there was
about
just 25 transplants. 25
yeah.
for yeah. And given your costs, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Given your costs, I don't see why you don't have 5 million patients, from all over the world.
Why
they're not banging your door down, visiting the Taj Mahal and getting their stem cell transplant.
Actually, the hospital is already overloaded. The Allen Institute of Medical Sciences, if you come anytime here, like in any given day, each clinic, each of us has to see more than 100 patients. So like three or four days a week, we have outpatient clinic, so this kind of overloaded. And we have 8 bedded transplant unit, which is always occupied, full kind of thing. So we really have a very rapid turnover most of the times, and we try to, as soon as people recover, we try to send them home.
So that was my next question. Is if you only do, say, 25 myeloma transplants, and there's 10 other hospitals that you had mentioned do transplant in India...
No. What I said that we have done about 225 transplants for myeloma, but we do the transplant for other conditions also, like lymphomas and also acute myelodysplastic leukemia. So most of our allogenic transplants are done for AMLs, and most of our auto transplants are done for the multiple myeloma and lymphomas, non-Hodgkin's and Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Okay, I guess I'm going back to the math again. And there's 10 hospitals in your prior conversation with Priya. There was 10 hospitals in India that do transplant. You do 300 stem cell transplants. That represents 3,000 patients. And what does that mean? The other 11,500 don't have an opportunity for it, or what?
No. What I said that we have done in last 15 years. About 225 transplants for multiple myeloma alone, and the total number is about somewhere 350 or some for auto transplant. Then there's some allogenic. So we have done about roughly 650 transplants at our center in last 15 years. And similar to like in India, total if you see the 10 hospitals which I mentioned earlier, we have now about 7,500 transplants done in the whole country, which includes nearly roughly about half of them are autologous transplant, and majority of these, two-thirds of the autologous transplants are for multiple myeloma. So given the size of the country and the population, the number is still small, but the reason that being that the transplant facility was started like in the only 3 or 4 centers to begin with 15 years back, and now some of the centers they have recently taken over. And most of these centers are in the private setup. And in the private setup, the cost of the transplant is still, I would say, it's high, which may not be in the reach of most people.
How high is that? Is one of those
For example, no, it's not. I mean, compared to U.S., it's much, much cheaper. For example, in our hospital, so this will be like almost nearly, if you take on the higher side, it will be like $5,000. But if you take in the private hospitals, it will be somewhere between close to $15,000.
Okay. Well, it just, like I said, I just can't imagine why there's not just a rush of people on vacation and getting their transplants at the same time. Still, because ours are 250,000 or 500,000,
Right. So that way it's a very, very, very small amount, actually.
Yeah. Okay. I do appreciate your responses, and obviously you're doing some really great work there. It does appear, though, like it is in our country that we have areas where we have specialists, like at Mayo, MD Anderson, Dana-Farber,
and
your place in India, it'd be similar, I would think. And those are the ones that seem to have the best survival rates, and the rest of the country is somewhat underserved, and it seems that India is no different.
That's right. I mean, like we, apart from the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, which is located in New Delhi, we have center like Christian Medical College, Vellore, which is very well known, and they have done a lot of good work in the field of thalassemia, which is another problem, and they have done a good number of transplants and done a lot of publications. Then we have Tata Memorial Hospital in Mumbai, which also has a good transplant unit. So I would say these are the three major transplant centers who have done the most of the work which has been done in the field of transplant. From, I would say, 75% work is from these three places. So these are, but they, now we have like 7 or 8 more centers which have been last 10 years which have come up. So gradually it's picking up. So more and more people are coming. I mean, so far we had very small number of trained hematologists and medical oncologists, but gradually this number is also going up. So we hope in next 10 years probably we'll have many more centers, and some of these transplants will become easier and cheaper also.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Doctor. And Jennifer is the only other one on the call at this point, and Jennifer has a few questions for you. Jennifer?
Okay, sure.
Yes, I was wondering, first of all, how does a patient go about finding a myeloma specialist in India?
Sorry, can you repeat, Jennifer, once again, please?
Oh, how would a patient find you in India? Is there any kind of online directory or anything that would help a patient who has myeloma find a specialist?
Okay. quite right. Actually, the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, one of the major tertiary care hospital in North India. So most of the patients, they come to like All India Institute of Medical Sciences, and we have a separate cancer center in this hospital, which is like about 150-bedded dedicated cancer hospital. So I work there. So like any patient who come to All India Institute of Medical Sciences, and like, for example, in orthopedics department or Department of Medicine or nephrology, because of some complications like renal failure or may come with the backache or something, and once they are diagnosed to or suspected to have multiple myeloma, they refer to the cancer center, and then they come to us. So then we take over on them, and that's one way. So most of our referrals are that way. And some of the referrals come from like city of Delhi, where we it's a huge population, and they know that the All India Institute is involved in this kind of work in multiple myeloma. So some of the colleagues and some of the physicians, if they know, then they refer to All India Institute. Sometime it may come to the directly to our department, and sometime it may go to some allied department, and then they finally refer to us. So, and I mean, the clinics' names are available on the website, in the hospital website. So sometimes people do ask direct inquiry also, whether the facilities are available, and then they can come or can see. But most of these people, they will come directly, actually, to the hospital.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. And then on another question, how many patients on average would you or another myeloma specialist treat? Just out of curiosity.
So the question is that like who do I treat the myeloma? Is that the question?
No, like how many patients does one myeloma specialist treat? Are you treating 100 myeloma patients or?
no, not 100, but we have like the number of specialists in the Department of Medical Oncology is still limited. So we have a myeloma clinic actually once in a week, but we see the patients like almost two or three times a week. When we in other clinics also, if they have myeloma and then somebody who is sick, then we see in other clinics also. I would say right now we get about two to three new cases per week of multiple myeloma in our clinics. So that's how it goes. So like we are the colleagues here, like the three people in the department who all of us, they get together and see the multiple myeloma cases.
Okay, wonderful. Do you mind if I, Gary, ask a few more questions?
Oh, please do. Yeah, we got, you can keep going.
Okay.
Jennifer, you're doing great.
Well, I'm just wondering if you ever do tandem transplants. I know sometimes in Europe they do tandem transplants, and some facilities in the United States do them. And I'm wondering if you do that as part of your protocol as well.
Actually, we are not doing tandem transplant as a routine. We have done only three transplants as a second transplant in the one of them you can call tandem because this was the case of plasma cell leukemia. So after the first transplant, within 3 months, we did the second transplant. But in other two cases, they relapsed and we did the second transplant after a year and a half or 2 years later. So this was not really the tandem in that sense. But we feel that we agree that like patients who achieve complete response or those who achieve very good partial response following transplant, probably they do not really benefit with the tandem transplant. And the tandem transplant, to my opinion, were done like initially when these molecules were not, the French group started somewhere before the advent development of these novel molecules, like before 2001. But now since we have the options of even they relapse after the first transplant, then you have the option of putting them one of the combinations, any of these novel molecules combinations, two or three drugs, and they have a good chance of responding. So I'm not really personally very kind of great believer in the tandem transplant.
Well, I know a lot of people have different thoughts on it, so I was just curious what was done in India. And then I have a question about clinical trials. Do you run clinical trials on myeloma?
There are few trials. We have participated in the only few trials, international trials. But what we have done in the department, a couple of trials, and like, for example, we have done one trial with the comparing the thalidomide dexamethasone with the lenalidomide and dexamethasone head-to-head. Far there really no trial in the literature comparing these two molecules head-to-head. And the reason why we decided to do this trial was because the thalidomide came in first one in the market and available to us for a long period of time till almost 2006 or so. And then the lenalidomide became available to us. And so general impression was that lenalidomide or Revlimid, what is in the U.S., is possibly more potent and more effective than thalidomide. So we have just completed about 132 patients randomized in a phase 3 trial between these two. And what we found that the complete remission rate or near complete remission rate or BGPR rate is similar actually in both. The only difference which we have found, which is significant, the median time for response in Revlimid dexamethasone arm is faster, shorter, it's about 8 weeks, compared to thalidomide dexamethasone arm, which is about 12 weeks. So that's the one difference we found. And secondly, the more patients, the overall survival was similar actually in both groups, as well as the progression-free survival. Now, the other difference which we found that the toxicity part, obviously the patients who got thalidomide, they had the major problem of constipation or neuropathy, while in the lenalidomide arm, we had neutropenia was more frequent and major issue. And we also have done the quality of life in these patients. We did not really find major difference except the some issues about the in the thalidomide arm because of the neuropathy and constipation. So in true sense, in this head-to-head trial, we have not been able to demonstrate any difference in the response rate or in the PFS or in the overall survival. I mean, we did this, made a poster presentation 2011 ASH meeting, and hopefully we probably will write it up in next 3-4 months and probably will to submit it for publication. So that's the one. What other trials which right now we are planning is that using bendamustine, which is another new molecule which has become available, and we have some generic brands available in India. So we are planning to do a trial of bendamustine plus lenalidomide and dexamethasone, which is weekly or short 40 milligram every week, the dexamethasone. And especially in the, this is a third or fourth line therapy, patients who have been exposed to lenalidomide or thalidomide or bortezomib in past 6 months and have progressed after the initial response. So those patients who have been exposed to all the three new novel agents and that progress, in those cases we will plan to give the bendamustine plus lenalidomide and dexamethasone. So that is the another recent trial which we have submitted for ethical clearance. And once we get permission, then probably we may like to start this. And third thing which we have just prepared a draft for, because that the patients of multiple myeloma, quite often if you do the follow-up, the M spike or M protein start rising, and that becomes kind of very disturbing for everybody. But surprisingly, and some patients, the M protein, even though it's there, they are absolutely asymptomatic. Sometimes you may have the value of 0.2, 0.3, or 0.8, or sometimes 1 gram. But we have found a number of patients who will be absolutely asymptomatic. Their hemoglobin is good. The creatinine is all right. And they do not have any kind of this thing. So the issue is this, whether people who are asymptomatic, just M protein being positive, do we really need to treat or not to treat? Or can we keep them under observation? Because now with so many options being available, so whether should be treating them as soon as they become positive or should be really keep them on observation and start treating when they become symptomatic or they have drop like 20% or more drop in the hemoglobin or a rise in the serum creatinine. So these were the two or three endpoints. This is something which we are now planning to submit. Right now we are preparing a draft for this. I feel this may be one of the useful thing. And personally, I feel this trial probably may, we may not find any difference. And our feeling is that it's probably it may take about, say, a couple of, about roughly close to 4 to 6 months' time before you really need a treatment to be started on these cases. This is something which I'm really quite excited about, this particular trial.
And when a patient comes to you, how do you handle clinical trials, I guess, or how do you recruit for clinical trials? When a patient comes in, do you just mostly give them the standard therapy and kind of educate them on the trials you're running and let them select? Or how does that work in India?
I mean,
there's a certain process in the States.
I mean, generally at our institute, we have a standard procedure. Like once you have a clinical trial, you should go through the all the standard checklist, like you get ethical clearance and other things. You have a the kind of research coordinator or, the staff. And when you get a patient then who is eligible, we first do the screening for individuals, like they are eligible for this inclusion in the trial. We go through those parameters. Once we complete those investigations, they are eligible. We sit with them, try to explain them the options that this is a standard treatment and this is something which we want to make some kind of comparison or some sort of the trial, the arm. We explain them and discuss. And if they are willing, then we enroll them. They take the consent and then they are followed up. And so that's how we normally go.
Okay.
I mean, so more or less, probably, at least in our institutes, I would say this is more or less standard, like internationally. I mean, we maybe have little short, we may not have too many staff to handle them separately, but we have some of the research coordinators in our group. Whenever we take a trial, we normally have one separate person to who will follow up these people, and then they are seen by the investigator as well as the research coordinator together.
Can I have one final question, Gary?
Sure.
Okay. You mentioned that carfilzomib wasn't yet available. Do you know when you expect it to be in India?
Carfilzomib?
Carfilzomib, yeah.
Is that
the one you said?
Yeah, carfilzomib. I was told that one of the companies, they are, I think, in the talks with the Onyx Pharmaceuticals, which is probably supplying, making it in U.S. So, I mean, they were hopeful that they probably will have some sort of agreement with them and they will be able to sell it in India. So probably, I would say, another few months should be available.
Okay,
I mean,
thank you so much.
We can get it actually, like, once it is approved in the U.S., there are some certain agency, like if you need to prescribe to some person who really need it and they have stopped responding to the other previous agents, then, like, you give a prescription to through this help of these companies, they are able to import the drugs. So, I mean, so that way is still available. I mean, one can use it. But for routine use, like, so that you can prescribe routinely without much of these hassles, that process may take a couple of months, that's I guess.
I had one other question for you, Doctor, and it had to do with, in India,
indeed.
I think you have a lot, for your population, you have a lot lower incidence of this. Do you have any idea, you know, as a matter of fact, we in the United States are 5 to 6, as are the people in Europe, 5 to 6 times more likely
right.
to get multiple yeah. myeloma than you are. And I think the Chinese are also, you know, they have the most multiple myeloma patients in the world. So my question is it just the good life or, you know, the good eating and clean air?
Okay.
What do you guys
yeah.
got going for you?
No, I think we have debated this earlier. We also do not really, honestly, do not understand whether the incidence is truly low or if we are not able to, there may be some problem in the recording the adequate number, the complete reporting is not there. I tell you. Now, the one reason possibly could be the longevity. The average survival in India is about 64.5 for men and about 69.5 for women today. I think 67, 69, it's like that. So this is still low. So since myeloma, the larger chunk, they still occur at the age, little in 70s and 80s. So that may be the one reason that our longevity is still not enough. And maybe in next 20 years when the longevity mm-hmm. goes up, so probably we'll have more cases of myeloma. That's number one. Secondly, if you see the population pyramid in India, it's inverted in the sense like we have 35% of population in India today is very young. So under the age of, I think, about 20 years or 21 years, so which is very, very young population. And secondly, the cancer registries, which record the data from all over the country, mainly from the metros and also from rural population, this represents only about 14% of the total population. It's possible that number of patients who are diagnosed to have myeloma, especially in the remote areas or in the rural population, may not be included in these reports. So that may also be one of the reasons that incidence appears to be a little low. But what data we have now from the metros like Delhi, Mumbai, and Chennai, and Bangalore, Delhi has shown in the last 20 years gradual increase in the incidence. From 1.2, it has gone to 1.8 in last 5 years. per 100,000, so which is gradually slightly rise. So and so my guess is that in next 10 years we should be little somewhere closer to the U.S. Incidence, probably especially with the U.S. whites. But it looks like if you take the data from China, like Shanghai data, which is available, and also from Japan, the incidence in Asia seems to be a little lower compared to the North America or the Western Europe.
We've been polluting longer, huh?
We don't know.
I think we, Jennifer, you have one more question, and then we'll go to the, Rhea, would you like to go to the listeners now?
Yes, actually I have a couple of questions sent in by our panelists who are not with us. Rubina, Dr. as I was mentioning, she is caregiver to her daughter with leukemia. So this is a question that she sent in. She says, most hospitals in India are silent on the nutrition for patients suffering from cancer. When her daughter was diagnosed with leukemia, she did a lot of research on the net, and she got information through word of mouth, but none from the doctors. When she's asked, when nutrition and diet play such an imperative role in fighting cancer, why does it remain so ignored in India?
Okay, this is something real, actually, question. I agree.
Yeah, actually, she's got a little one, eight role with
I personally feel like, let me say in my practice what happens.
Yeah.
In my practice, like, I feel this little lot of cultural sort of thing. Like, for example, when we treat patients, even for a stem cell transplant, so, like, they go through the all this kind of the mucositis and other things in myeloma, particularly the because of hydromelphalan, that lead to mucositis, sometimes the diarrhea and other things. So we normally, like, tell them to take semi-solids or liquids and those kind of things. But in general, like, many people often they keep on asking what kind of diet and other things, even though we have a little discussion in the beginning itself that this is the kind of thing which you will go through and you may need to take some of those things. But in the routine clinics, when we see the patients, like, for chemotherapy for solid tumors or leukemia and other things, so there's a little confusion in the sense, like, sometimes people say you don't need to take any fruits or raw vegetables. And traditionally people will believe that if they have some major kind of chemotherapy or something going on, they feel that fruit juice or fruit is probably better for the health rather than having the solid food. So that kind of confusion always remains in the minds of many of the people. I mean, I personally don't really, I tell them that you just have to wash with the hot water or two times and the peel off the skin, and then you can take, and this will not be any issue about that. So they get a little lot of, so that's one. But I agree what you said rightly, that we probably do not discuss too much. One, that we, in our group, we have a dietitian in the hospital, but then the dietitian generally, I mean, the limited number of people, and they generally are busy more in the looking after the patient with the diabetes and other things, and they're counseling them about the diet and all those things. So, but you're right, actually. It's not given somehow major attention which should have been.
Yes, yes, that's right. Doctor, your patient's caregiver, Nancy, she asks, I think her husband is on maintenance therapy. So she wants to know, should we get stem cells preserved for future use? And where can we get the facilities for preserving the cells?
Actually, for multiple myeloma, I'm not sure whether we should be, I mean, I know that in the U.S. and in the many other centers in the world, they try to preserve the stem cells after the initial treatment when the myeloma is in remission, and then do consider them for later on for transplant whenever need arise in future. What we have not done any randomized trial, but we have data on these first 200 patients which we have analyzed recently. And in fact, what we found that patients who underwent transplant within 9 months or within 12 months, they had a very significant improvement, better overall survival as well as the progression-free or event-free survival compared to those patients who underwent transplant after 12 months. But now, after having said this, most of our data is like many patients who have been treated outside, then they came to us. Some were primary treatment, some were multiple lines of treatment, some were refractory also. So it's like very heterogeneous data. But somehow, I personally feel, especially in the country like ours, where you have limited resources, I feel that if you they respond as expectedly, that they achieve good response, then doing elective transplant is much easier and much cheaper, rather than storing the stem cells and then later on doing transplant when they relapse. That's number one. Secondly, as far as the cryopreservation of stem cell is concerned, this can be done in any of these major private hospitals they are doing. We also do it, actually. And there are also private agencies, like some of the companies, which they are now popularizing this in India, and they possibly also do these stem cell freezing. So this can be done. This should not be an issue.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor. I received some questions via email, Doctor. Most of them are asking for some advice regarding myeloma treatment. I think they're from various parts of the country. I'll just quickly go through them. The first one is from Suvrendra. He says his mother is suffering from multiple myeloma. She's 74. And it was detected while operation for a compression fracture backbone. He says she is presently bedridden at home and is getting disoriented day by day.
Yeah,
and
I did read, actually. I assume that they have done all the tests for myeloma, including the bone marrow X-ray survey and electrophoresis test. And so the diagnosis of myeloma is pakka diagnosis. And the cause for disorientation can be many. One, that if she has any kind of dehydration or any infection, like pneumonia or any infection, or sometimes renal failure if she has any kidney dysfunction not normal, which can happen in a small percentage in the 20% people with the multiple myeloma. So I would suggest that there could be three or four of these common, which are correctable causes, which are reversible if they are treated. So to get her quickly in touch with either a good physician nearby or nearby some hospital which deals with the cases of multiple myeloma, they can check out on her vitals, on her chemistry, blood sugar, etc., and any infection, any chest X-ray. And if there is any deficiency, it can be corrected. So at least the cause for disorientation is something which I'm a little worried. And once that is done, then subsequently they can take decision to treat her. And one of the option, as we were mentioning in the initial part, that she is 74. So one of the option could be melphalan, prednisolone, thalidomide, or bortezomib plus melphalan, prednisolone also could be one of the option which could be attempted in her case.
Okay. The next one, his mother is also suffering from multiple myeloma. He says he came to know about it, the day, maybe a couple of days back when he sent in the question. She is being treated at Manipal Hospital, Udupi, Karnataka state in India. He wants, can you please let me know if multiple myeloma can be cured or any treatments for
the same? At this stage, I would like to say that multiple myeloma today is treatable and many patients can have good, long-term survival with good quality of life. And secondly, the facilities for treatment, good hospitals, as he has asked. I mean, there are a number of, especially since he lives in Udupi, there are a number of hospitals in that area. And one, I would recommend that like CMC Vellore, Christian Medical College Vellore, is a very good hospital, which should be about nearly within 2 hours from their place. Then in Bangalore proper, they have St. John's Hospital. There is Manipal Hospital in Bangalore, and also Kidwai Memorial Institute of Oncology, which also deals with the multiple myeloma case. So there are 3-4 hospitals in Bangalore which are pretty very good. and probably should be able to get a good treatment there.
Okay, thank you, doctor. Another question is from, he's not given in his name. Anyway, his initials are SS. And if he's listening, I think I'm reading out his question. His father and him, both of them are multiple myeloma survivors. His father has been having multiple myeloma for past 7 years. He says it's refractory, and we have run out of combinations for him and are looking for new clinical trials or medicine.
Okay. Actually, yes. I just like to mention here that when we say refractory myeloma, then we generally quite often we use them little, many times people call them little loosely, in the sense they, sometimes it could just simply relapse, sometimes it could be primary refractory, or sometimes it could be relapse and refractory myeloma. So basically the relapse and refractory myeloma, as it looks like in this case, generally we call if the people who have initially treated and they have responded and then they have relapsed and not respond to the salvage therapy. But it looks like to me that he has got multiple lines of therapy and now probably not responding. So in such a situation, the option could be like if he received like thalidomide dexamethasone in past, then one can try go for Lendexa, lenalidomide dexamethasone or bortezomib dexamethasone. Or if they have received the bortezomib dexamethasone, then one can try to combine lenalidomide along with it. Or there could be possible option of BCD, which is bortezomib, cyclophosphamide, dexamethasone. Or then the bendamustine is also available. That could be also one of the regime. Bendamustine plus lenalidomide dexamethasone could be attempted. Or we have found in some cases there is a regime called DCEP, which has been popularized by the Barlow group in Arkansas, which is also a very good regime, and we have attempted in few patients who have become refractory to some of the novel agents, and this also can give a good response, at least in the short term.
Thank you, doctor. Yes, the final one is from Mr. Sushil. He says his father is 80 years old and has last 8 months has been losing weight, and he was diagnosed with chronic renal failure. And in CKD investigation, multiple myeloma was suspected. And he's being treated in Delhi, he says, as I don't think hospital has specified. He says all the tests have been done, and the doctor has confirmed that it is myeloma. And he has been advised bortezomib and dex weekly. Presently, he says very weak. He says, please tell me whether it is the line of treatment.
Yeah, actually, I think in presence of renal failure, bortezomib is a very good drug. So bortezomib plus prednisolone, like dexamethasone, either in the low dose at the age of 80 years, I would suggest 20 milligram per week probably would be one of the reasonable. Or sometime what we do, like we give for 20 milligram daily for 4 days to bring down the renal failure, renal functions to bring to the urea and creatinine to improve. And once they have become better, then we put them the weekly 20 milligram dexamethasone. Sometimes people find difficult to tolerate, then we change this to the prednisolone. So bortezomib plus prednisolone also could be one of the options which could be tried in his case. And suppose if you find difficult to tolerate bortezomib like weekly for 4 weeks every month, then one can give like week, that's day 1, day 8, and day 15. That's a week 1, week 2, and week 3. And then you can omit on the week 4. So some tailoring can be done. And my feeling that he probably will be able to tolerate this combination.
Thank you, doctor. Before we sign off, I have one final question for you. Dr. Kumar, I think you must be knowing that the ASH conferences begin at the end of the week. And today, Jenny is, I'm sure, going on your, would be attending. Isn't that right, Jenny? Jenny, you're can you hear me?
Sorry. Yeah, now I can hear you.
Yeah, you're going to the ASH, isn't it, Jenny?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Dr. Kumar, couple of... Jenny, I can't hear you very clearly, actually.
Okay, sorry, we were having some technical challenges. Can you repeat your question?
No, I was just mentioning to Dr. Kumar that you will be attending the ASH, and...
Oh, yes,
Yeah. And some of our panelists also are attending the ASH. And Dr. Kumar, I wanted to know, is there any particular looking forward to hearing being...
In the field of myeloma, what kind of highlights in the ASH expected? Is that the question?
Yeah. I want to know what I gather
that there are probably a number of papers which are going to be presented, especially phase three trials, on these two new molecules like carfilzomib with the and the pomalidomide, which is Pomalyst. This is the new molecule in the lines of after the lenalidomide, which is again more potent than the lenalidomide and has shown very good promise in the combinations with different combinations. And so I think a lot of data is going to be presented on that. And also on the carfilzomib, which again has been tried in the various combinations with either lenalidomide or with melphalan or borinostat or even pomalidomide. So that's the one expected. And secondly, so this is going to be the phase 3 data, at least one or two trials which are recently, and in fact one of the trial on the pomalidomide has been reported by the Spanish group just in month of October. And so my guess is that we will have some data on these. And the second, which is major thing which is happening in the field of myeloma, is on the monoclonal antibodies. And particularly the two monoclonal antibody like IL-6 receptor antibody with the name of cetuximab. And IL-6, as you know, is one of the major cytokines for the growth of plasma cells, which is responsible for the proliferation of plasma cells. So recently, in the last 2 years, there have been very interesting data in the phase 1 and phase 2 trials, which have shown that the IL-6 receptor antibody, cetuximab, along with the bortezomib or Velcade, has, and along with dexamethasone, has shown very good response rates in the initial trials. So I think this is the one molecule which is going to probably enter into the phase 2 and phase 3 trials in different combinations. And also there is another monoclonal antibody, elotuzumab, which is also possibly going to be find much of, many of the papers are going to be, some experience will be presented in the, so this is going to be very exciting in the field of myeloma.
Thank you, Dr. Kumar. I think that was a wonderful discussion. Gary and Jenny, thank you so much for being here with us. And Dr. Kumar, I think our listeners would have really benefited a lot from hearing about the various treatment options that we have here in India. And I think there's a lack of awareness, a general lack of awareness regarding what myeloma is or where treatment can be availed and whom to contact. I hope this show helped them to get at least some information. If you have, if you need any more information, please mail me priya@chilex.com and I'll try to provide as much as I can. And I'm really looking forward to your feedbacks and suggestions and topics that you would like to hear on this show here. Next show on multiple 12.
Okay.
2013 Myeloma Research. Thank you, Dr.
Okay.
It was great having you here.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jenny. And thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Doctor. And Priya, thank you. I think it was really great that you could bring
thank
this
you.
Kind of information. Anything that helps to get the message out, because you know, we people don't even know what multiple myeloma is until they get it, and we'd like
we'd like to get the
message that it exists out to everybody.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, everybody.